There's Christianity or Judaism or Islam or the Theosophical tradition or any tradition. Every single one of these spiritual and religious traditions talks about one thing as the most important thing to understand. That you are here, I am here, because in the human form alone, we can begin this journey of spiritual evolution. That's monumental. That's huge. There's about 3-4 billion people on the planet, right? Let's just take a look at how many life forms there are. How many fishes in the sea? Maybe trillions. How many animals? How many insects? Trillions upon trillions, right? How many trees? When you count up all the species, all the life forms that exist on the planet, and then reduce that to a mere 6.2 billion people on this planet who have the opportunity in this human form to evolve spiritually, you folks, we are the most blessed already. We have already been given the greatest, most amazing opportunity in our daily lives in this incarnation to evolve spiritually, because it is only in this form where this is possible. This is the greatest opportunity. You know, I heard this when I went to India and met my spiritual master for the first time. I heard him say this many, many times. Didn't sink in. Took a while to sink in. We hear these things, but do they register? If they registered, when we wake up in the morning, we would have a blessed day in just acknowledging this reality. That here is another day that I can spend focusing on evolving spiritually, not just for my own sake, but for all humanity. And when we realize at an even deeper level that this whole planet, this whole evolution, all of the planets in the whole solar system, all the inner planes, all of the different life forms are all here for the sole purpose of spiritual evolution, then it gets really, really big. So what's the practical advice that comes out of this? Well, you probably know already, right? Commit to a practice of meditation every day. Commit to a practice of meditation. That's acknowledging the immense gift you've already been giving and saying, I'm going to do something about it. If we're not doing that, we have lost the most precious opportunity that the human form can give us. I don't care what kind of meditation you're doing. I don't care what tradition you belong to. Commit to your spiritual practice on a daily basis. Start with that. Action plan number one. If you forget everything else that I say tonight, remember that. This coming Saturday, we can talk about it. All right? The end of this day, end of this little seminar here or talk here, I'd like to spend some time in meditation. That in itself will put us in the right direction. So, I'd like to leave with a quote. My master, His Holiness Sankar Paul Singh, used to say, humans are the crown of creation. We are all micro-gods. That's how great this opportunity is. We are micro-gods. So let us rise to our own greatness. We've already been given the greatest gift already. Let us rise to our own greatness. Okay. I'd like to share with you another little story, moving along this same theme. And this is a story from the Hindu tradition. Although, you know, when you start reading these spiritual stories, as anyone does, you'll find out it's kind of ironic that you see the same story in 5 different traditions. So this is what we call the perennial wisdom. So this story appears in the Hindu tradition, but I've seen it in other traditions as well. It's called the Meena Bazaar, and this is the story of a king in India who was very gracious and one day decided to open up his kingdom and all the gifts in the kingdom, and he invited everybody in his kingdom to come and take whatever they wanted out of the storehouse, the treasury of this great kingdom. And so The only rule was that you could only take one gift, and once you took the gift, you had to leave. So he had these huge halls filled with all kinds of wonderful gifts. And people were coming in, and they were praising this graciousness of the king, and each of them taking something and then leaving. And this went on for pretty much the whole day. But there was this one young lady who came in and had not taken anything during the entire day. She had looked, she went to every place, and she saw all the gifts, but she decided not to take anything. And the doors were about to close. And the king came up to her and says, "Well, why haven't you chosen anything?" And she pondered that question, and she said, "Well, I have a question for you." He said, "To whom do all these gifts belong?" And he said, "Me. They're part of my kingdom, my treasury." So she said, "Well, if I pick you, and is that okay?" And he said, "You can pick me. So if I pick you, that means that I get all of the treasury because this all belongs to you." And so she did. So a humorous tale, very childlike. But the wisdom behind this is profound. We come into this world, and the problem is we choose the gifts of the great giver and not the giver himself. Who is the giver of all gifts? To whom do all creation belong? From where do all these gifts arise? The gifts of life and sight and breath and gratitude, and contentment, and joy. All of these are in the treasury of the divine beloved, the divine king, who is the sovereign of all sentient life. What we do is we get real small-minded, and we grab the little things in our life that we think will give us happiness instead of taking the giver of all gifts. So the first great lesson on the spiritual path is go for the giver of all. Go for the treasury of everything, the one who can give you everything, including the most important gift, which is love itself. And if we choose the source itself of all gifts, we get all gifts automatically. And that's easier said than done, because these gifts look very enticing, don't they, on the physical level, right? And it's so easy to get wrapped up in these physical gifts or the emotional gifts or whatever else that we often forget the giver. And this is the conundrum. So what do we need to do? We need to realize that the real happiness that we seek actually does not come from the outer gifts, but the gift of the giver himself. And so every day what we need to do is to remember the giver. What does that mean, remember the giver? It means invoke. It means remember literally who has created us. So we go from a state of wanting to praising. The big shift in consciousness from wanting to praising. In other words, we begin to remember God in everything we do. We bring the remembrance, the invocation, and the praise of God into everything we do. That's the second call to action. Your first call to action, meditate. Your second call to action, praise. Praise the giver, not the gifts. But you can praise the gifts too if you praise the giver. But start with the giver first. So what's going to happen out of that is some amazing things. Too amazing to believe until you actually practice it. we begin to experience joy. We begin to feel connected to the consciousness of the giver, which is the consciousness of love. And that love and that joy begins to be infused in our being by just remembering God. Just remembering God. So let's just take a step back for a minute. Some people say you can think maybe somewhere between 60 and 70,000 thoughts per day. If you figure there's 23,400 in-breaths and 23,400 out-breaths, that's right away about 47,000 breaths. Figure at least one or two thoughts per breath, and you've got at least 60 or 70,000 thoughts, right? And maybe even much more. How many of those are dedicated to remembering the source and to praising the source? 10 a day? Not a good ratio, folks. Not a good ratio. So why do we say that? Because as you think, so you become. If we're thinking about all the world all the time, if we're thinking about all the gifts that we have or we don't have, we've still forgotten the giver. And if we have forgotten the giver, we've forgotten why we're here and what we're supposed to be doing. And that's not a good strategy for happiness. That's a good strategy for stress, and which is what we get. So every day, commit to a practice of remembering God throughout your day. I don't care if you remember God through a Christian name or a Jewish name or a Hindu name or a Buddhist name, because all names refer to the same power. And try that. Start with 10 times a day. I'm going to sit and I'm just going to recollect and praise God and remember God. Be grateful for those things. Try it. Get from 10 to 20. Get from 20 to 100. Get from 100 to 500. When you get to 500, I'll come and kiss your feet. Okay? But if you get to 5,000, I will guarantee you no one in this room will be the same. No one. You will be smiling. You will be joyful. You'll be hugging the trees. You'll be kissing the ground. And you will be totally immersed in the love of God. 5,000. Check it out. When you get to 500, email me. I'll give you my email. I'm serious. I want you to do that. All great masters have said, this is how we connect. Whether you call it mantra or litany or invocation or remembrance or praise, there is not a tradition that says do not do that. How many people are doing that? We are thinking of the world 98% of the time. And mostly in the negative sense of it. Our problems, meeting the telephone bill, the electric bill, our problems with our home, our colleagues, our friends, our jobs, our health, our car, disasters, so on and so forth, right? It just goes on and on and on. You look at those thought forms, they're taking you in the wrong direction. So we got to bring it back. That's the second step in gratitude. So there is a beautiful story, or actually a quote that I'd like to share with you on this theme. And the quote is very well known. Everyone knows it. It comes from the New Testament. Jesus tells us, he says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all things shall be added unto you. Well, I was once talking with a friend of mine about the meaning of this quote. It was a humorous conversation. So the person was saying, you know, I think what Jesus meant by that was that if you seek God, then you'll also get your Mercedes-Benz as well. Or whatever else you wanted, right? And I said, you know, I have a slightly different interpretation of that. All right? And he was serious. He really felt that if he was seeking God, then he could get everything that he really wanted. Okay? But he was going to seek God because it was a shortcut to getting what he wanted. I said, I don't think that's what it means. I think what it means is that if you seek God sincerely, you don't need anything else. Now you tell me, if you have God, do you need the Mercedes-Benz too? If you have the giver of everything, the giver of life and immortality and joy and wisdom, and do you really need anything else? And I think this is what Jesus was telling us. Get our focus in the right place and everything will be added unto you. That the material things too, at whatever level they need to come, they will come. But they shouldn't be the focus of our existence. And this is the problem. There's a story I'd like to share with you about that. It's actually a story that one of my spiritual masters shared with me when I was in India. And he told his personal story about Sant Kripal Singh, who was my spiritual master, and Sant Darshan, who is his son, who later became the spiritual master. And it's a true story. In India, the master was traveled very, very, very widely throughout India, actually throughout the world as well. And he had a small Studebaker at those days, and they had a driver, and he would often drive 6 to 7 hours a day. And during the monsoon season, it was extremely wet and extremely muddy. Any of you been to India? Yeah, oh, okay, so we do know, we know a little bit. All right, if you haven't been there, might be a good chance to go. Very muddy during the monsoon season, so the car had been traveling about 3 or 4 hours, and it had gotten like completely caked with mud. Because if you know about anything about Indian roads, they are not thoroughfares. They don't look like anything here. Yeah. All right. And so they came to a pit stop. They were approaching where the master was going to give a talk. And so they pull it over, and His Holiness Sant Kripal Singh tells his son Darshan to get the car cleaned up before they arrive so it wouldn't be looking like a mess. So they have these like little pit stops in India. I don't want you to call them anything more than a pit stop, but they're basically like roadside stands where the little person selling some tea over a hot fire or something, and you know, it's pretty basic. And there was a guy there, some people who were just kind of hanging out, and they do various odds and ends jobs. And so he commandeered one of these people who probably is one of from the lower caste, because in India, unfortunately, even though caste is outlawed, there's still a lot of caste consciousness. And he offered him a few pence, you know, actually would be a rupee or two, which would amount to maybe about 25 cents or something, probably, to clean the car up. And the guy gladly cleaned it up. He did a fabulous job. And when Sant Kripal Singh came back and looked at the car, he said, this guy did a great job. Why don't you ask him to do the interior as well? So his son, Darshan, goes to the same guy and he says, listen, you did a great job. Here's a few extra rupees. Would you do the interior as well? So what does the guy tell him? He says, you know, I made enough for today. No, thank you. I made enough for today. No, thank you. I don't need it. He goes back and he tells his father, Sant Kripal Singh, that he refused to do any further work. He said he had made enough for today. He's fine. And here's what the master's words are. He says, anyone who has such like contentment and faith will definitely see God. We have so much. We haven't caught up with any of it. You look around. We have been given so much on a material level. Here's this guy. He doesn't have a house. He doesn't have a car. He had a couple of pairs of pants to wear. He earns a little bit of money, just enough to eat. He's happy. He's happy. He's content. Am I making my point how much we have been given and how little we're grateful for? You could get up every morning. You could spend 5 hours just counting your blessings and you wouldn't get through. You couldn't even get through your day if you actually counted up all the blessings that were been given. Gratitude is a state of awareness. It's a higher state of consciousness, folks. That's what gratitude is. It's an evolved state of consciousness of those who are on the spiritual path. And it comes out of the work of meditation, of remembering God, and focusing ourselves in the right direction. So here's an action plan for you. Very concrete. We've got to keep it concrete, right? So when you go here, you won't say, I didn't remember, this was all hocus pocus. Stop complaining about anything. Just take a vow, if you will, in front of everybody here. I will not complain anymore. Who's ready to raise your hands? Good. That's better than most. Stop complaining and start praising. Every time you think of that, turn it into a praise. And if not a praise, at least a prayer. This is how we transform our lives. No one's going to do it except you. No one's going to do it for me. You've got to do it. I've got to do it. We've all got to do it together. I was with my own spiritual master, Sankar Paul Singh, and one time someone asked him, he said, how do you know if you're making spiritual progress? Because everybody wants to know if they're progressing spiritually, because the ego gets bigger, you know. So he said, very simple. When you stop complaining. So simple. Is it so hard? But you will find, just monitor your daily conversations and the conversations of others. You'll find most of the people in the daily conversations we had with people, they're complaining about their job, their money, their source of income, their family relationships, particularly their near and dear ones, and all of the problems. It's just one litany of complaint after another. Then we also have this wonderful thing of complaining about the weather. Now, I've never been able to figure that one out. What good does it do to complain about the weather? When it's sunny, we say we need rain. When it's rainy, we say we need sun. When it's cloudy, we have a complaint about everything. We are the masters of the complainers. That's what we become. You name it, we could complain it. Little things, but why are we wasting our energy with that stuff? And you know what I'm talking about. That's why you're laughing. So these are the things that have to change if we're going to change. They're basic. They're small, but they're fundamental, right? They're fundamental. All right, I'd like to share with you a little story, again, from my spiritual tradition. I was with my master in India, and one of the humorous stories he would tell is that he would say that if you took the world and you divided it up into four quadrants, and you put power in one quadrant, and fame in another quadrant, and wealth in a third quadrant, and in the fourth quadrant, you put God, 99.9% of the people would be in the other three quadrants. So, but there is a deeper truth to what he was really saying. And that was just kind of the opening salvo. Then he said something even more powerful. He said, God loves us so much that he gives you whatever you really want. So if you want power and fame and wealth and reputation and accomplishment and all of it, he'll give you all that. If you really want that, you'll get it. Might take a couple lifetimes, all right? But you'll get it. He'll give it to you. If you want it, he'll give it to you. That's the deal on this planet. You want it, you get it. Then you find out you didn't really want it anymore. You found out it wasn't what you thought it was, right? And that's called spiritual evolution. Tried it, been there, done that, doesn't work. Right? That's probably why you're here today. Because whatever you were doing in your life didn't work, that you thought was going to give you the golden egg, right? Of understanding, of truth, of enlightenment, wasn't working. So the wisdom behind that is very profound. God allows us to exhaust all of these desires so that we come to understand what we're really here for and what we really want. And the deep recognition that comes out of that, the deep profundity that comes out of that, is it that it is not, how should I say this? It is not by fulfilling desires, it is by letting go of desires that we come to gratitude and contentment. I'll say it again. It's not by fulfilling, it's by letting go of them, relinquishing them, that we come to fulfillment and gratitude. Easier said than done, right? Easier said than done. But I have a task for you. What I'd like you to do. So we got, this is number four. Are you counting? I hope so. I hope we're not forgetting. This week, give up one selfish desire and replace it with one selfless one. And we know the difference, okay? Replace one selfish desire with one selfless one. And selfless means something you're going to do for others. If we as a family, if we as a community, if we as a nation, if we as a world operated like this, there would be no hunger, there would be no thirst, there would be no homelessness. It's because we are so wrapped up in our little self, in our little selfish desires, that we have no time to think about anyone else. Is that too hard to add, to think? Is that not so hard to do, right? One selfish desire, make it one selfless one. Or as another great spiritual teacher once said, wish for others what you would wish for yourselves, and do it. Right? These are the secrets of a joy-filled life. These are the secrets that the great masters of all tradition have known about, do know about, who have brought in their teachings since time immemorial, that this institution, this beautiful, wonderful lodge here, this beautiful place, is giving that same message out to people in its own way, in its own forms. It's the same message that has been given out by all great spiritual masters and will be continued to be given out by all spiritual masters, right? This is the work that he is calling all of us to join into, right? Our collective work, our individual work, our collective work. I'd like to share with you a quote that had a profound effect on me on this same theme. My spiritual master, Sankar Paul Singh, used to say, simplify, simplify, simplify. Simplicity is strength. To be simple is to accept life. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Simplicity is strength. To be simple is to accept life. There's profound truth in that. And there's a profound wisdom in understanding what that means. When we really hone in on why we are on this planet and what we really need to be happy, to be joyful, to be blissful, you realize you already have it. You already got it. You don't need any more. I'll share with you a little something that's been happening in my life. We're going to be selling our house, and we're going through this process of simplification. And I was having a conversation with Kathy, because Bob and Kathy are kind of going through the same thing right now. Now, when you get to be my age, this may happen to all of you. You may have to cut down. And guess what? It's a lot of fun, actually. You realize you don't need any of it. So I had the joy of, we have a library in our center in Amityville. And I have had a penchant for collecting books over the years, and I have quite a big library. And so I've been donating all of my, more than 3/4 of my library. And let me tell you, do you think I was reading all those books the last 20 years? Come on. I didn't pick half of them up, let alone know they were on the shelves, right? So when we give, we are gifted. Gifted with what? With the joy of giving. And there's so much that we can give. We need so little on the outer level. So I just thought I'd throw that out to you. That's a personal, since we were talking about that. All right, a couple of more stories here and a couple of more thoughts. This is a little bit more serious story, but it is on the same theme, and it goes a little, I think it takes this theme a little bit deeper. It's the story of Prophet Muhammad and the Sahaba, Prophet Muhammad and what we call a very pious couple. And what happened was that Prophet Muhammad, in the early days, they would all gather for the prayers, the evening prayer, and the whole community would come together, and he would lead them through the prayers. And as you know in Islam, if any of you are from Muslim tradition or know anything about Islam, that you are required to be present, and there's a certain attire that you have to wear. Women have to be dressed fully. It doesn't mean they have to wear a scarf. That's a later thing that was occurred. But they do have to be present. And the women are on one side, men are on the other. So it so happens that they were noticing that there was this one man who was coming in for the Friday prayers, because the prophet would give a short talk afterwards. He would come in a tremendous rush, as soon or very close to the end of the official prayer, he would run out. And the Sahaba, who were the companions of the prophet, were very annoyed at first and felt that this behavior was very disrespectful to the prophet. You'd be leaving the prophet's presence, running out without saying goodbye, without giving any kind of a formal greeting, etc., was very disrespectful. And so they were wondering, what is going on with this guy? He's not giving proper respect. He's not giving the correct good manners to the prophet, so on and so forth. So they were questioning him. And so they brought this situation. This happened 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And finally, they brought it to the attention of the prophet. And they said, the prophet said to him, he said, listen, why don't you do this? Why don't you follow him back and see why he's rushing out of here so quickly? What's the reason? So they do that. And to their amazement, they realize that as soon as the prayers are over, this guy is running full speed back to his house. When he gets to the house, he immediately takes off his clothes and gives his one garment, the one garment he had, to his wife, who then puts the same clothes on and runs as fast as she can all the way back to the mosque, where she will complete her prayers because she needed the clothing. So they were kind of amazed, because they thought, oh, he was being disrespectful, he was being discourteous, he was not following correct adab or good manners, and so on and so forth. They found this out. They brought it back to the prophet, and the prophet said, these are very pious people. And he said, let us take a collection and give them enough money to buy all the clothes they need. And furthermore, not only all the clothes they need, but any other necessities of life that they should have. And so they took a collection, and after the Jummah prayer again that following, they brought it over to the man and his wife, and they offered it. And the man accepted it graciously as a gift of the prophet. After all, anything that you get from a prophet or a saint or a sage is a great blessing, no, right? And he brought it to his wife, and his wife said, no, we can't accept it. Can't accept it? Listen to what she said. She said, take these back to the prophet with our humble request. Whatever God has given us so far is all we need. We don't need anything more. This is enough for us, and to take anything more would be a rejection of God's will for us. So send it back to the prophet and donate it to the poor somewhere else. What happened? Disciples come back. They're shocked. They can't believe this. They bring it back to the prophet and they said, look, they wouldn't accept it. They said that whatever God has given them is sufficient unto them, and to accept anything more would be to be outside the realm of gratitude toward the giver for what we have been given. Listen to what the prophet said. Prophet said, these people are my true followers. These are the people who understand my teachings, and these are the people who are the most blessed of all of you. And from now on, they will be at the head of congregation and lead the prayer. So I think we can go back and understand the depth again of what gratitude really is. How deep does gratitude get? And let's compare ourselves. This is, by the way, this is a true story. It comes out of the Hadith. This is not a made-up fairy tale. People like that actually exist. Can you imagine? Yes. In the West, very hard to imagine. I know. It's very hard to imagine that people could exist like that. They do. They have. And maybe amongst us, there are people like that. We don't know, right? That is a very profound level of gratitude. So everything, what we have to recognize and what we have to understand, that everything is a matter of perception. And abundance is also a matter of perception, isn't it? It's a question of what you believe is abundant. If you've already believed, as this couple did, that they have received everything that they need, you're content, you're happy, you're fulfilled. You don't need anything more. All of the desires that we have, that we keep accumulating in our lives in so many different ways, actually stand between us. They are the veils between us and the vision of God. They're the individual veils between the vision of God we seek. That's the realm of the darkness that we have to get rid of. So, what's the call to action? Well, you can figure that one out, right? Do I need to say that one? Figure out what we don't need, and let's move it on. Pass it along, right? You know, I'm hail from New York. Everybody knows what happened in New York, right? Obviously, a tremendous amount of destruction. Probably the biggest storm that ever hit the East Coast in 150 years. And yet, what's amazing is that those who get it, get it. And there are those who realize that this was a big wake-up call for them. They begin to realize what's really important in their lives. And that is that they have a life, and that they are alive, and that what they really should be doing. And lucky are those few who realize that. These are how these moments of crisis shift our perspective back and hone it in right into the truth. So the irony of ironies is that this, in its own special way, is a great gift. And if it can cause people to awaken to their higher destiny, to what they really need to be doing on this planet, then it's the greatest thing that could ever have happened to them. And of course, it's also a great gift for people who are not hit in that way, for them to give and be helpful, and to be able to give and help in whatever way one can to assist those people. So during moments of crisis, we have the opportunity to realign to the light within us, realign to the real work that we're supposed to be doing, and also the opportunity to give back in some small measure, which is amazing. So let me end with one little story, and then we'll sit for meditation and we'll take some questions. And this story has a kind of a double meaning, but it is, I think, moves along the same lines. So this is again a story from the Hadith of the Prophet. And the Prophet, as all great masters and teachers try to do, they try to teach us through example, experientially. So because we remember things more that way. So one day, he brought his followers. They were already living in the desert, but the Sahaba were like, you know, like the core group, the guys who were supposed to really get it, right? Sahaba simply means companion. They're the people who were with the Prophet from the very beginning. They're the guys who were supposed to really carry on the work afterwards. It's like the 12 disciples of Christ, minus one maybe, that are supposed to really understand the truth. So he takes them out into the desert, and he lines them up in a straight line. And he faces them in the opposite direction of the sun. So he tells them, he said, listen, I want you to run until I tell you to stop. And I want you to follow your shadow. Run after your shadow. So if you understand that the sun is behind them, right? Then therefore, as they're running forward, the shadow will be in front of them. And he says, I want you to chase your shadow until you catch it. No questions asked. People aren't, you know, in those days, they don't say, okay, well, you know, you can't chase. No, you don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut. That's first good manners. The first good manners you should have to know that you don't know, okay? These guys line up. He says, run. They run. He didn't say run 100 yards, 200 yards, 300 yards, 400. He just said run. And they continue to run until he said stop. He said, now turn around and run toward me. So then they run full speed toward the prophet. They come to him and they stop. And he said, okay, what was the meaning of this? What's the meaning of this exercise? So people were unable to figure out, well, why was he making us run after our shadows? Why was he making us run in this direction and that direction? No one could figure it out. So the prophet said, okay, let me tell you the meaning of this little exercise. He said, when I told you to the other to run to try to catch your shadow, the shadow is the world and everything the world has to offer, name and fame and money and power and all the other little desires. And you will have noticed that no matter how long you run, you will never catch your shadow. You can run from now to eternity. You will never catch the shadow. Because the world and everything the world represents is really an illusion. And it cannot give you what you think you want. And your whole journey is to understand that. However, second part of the demonstration, even more important, said, when you ran toward me, you noticed that the shadow followed you. And as fast as you run, the shadow ran as fast as you, right? And notice who you were running toward. Not me, the person, the prophet, but you were running toward what I represent, which is God. That's gratitude. So when we run after the world, you never get it anyways. When you run after God and run toward the spiritual masters, when you run toward the guides who are the embodiment of light, when you run toward them, you run to the truth, you get both, the best of both worlds. Simple demonstration, the whole truth embodied there. Run to the light. Run to the spiritual masters, run to the mystics and the sages, run to them, because in running to them, you'll get everything else as well. They're the embodiments of truth and light and wisdom. They're the ones who have made God's will their will. And I would say that if you are seeking to go to a certain destination, take someone who's gone to the destination. They can guide you there. If you want to be friends with God, make friends with his friends. And who are his friends? The saints and the masters and the prophets and the enlightened beings, right? Make them your friends. If we want light, if we want that divine illumination, go to the light givers who are here to give that light. So, I think our time is kind of up, but I'd like to just share with you a short meditation here to wrap things up, since that's our first call to action, right? So, in wrapping up, let me say your last call to action is to seek wisdom, to seek the spiritual guidance of the great masters who have come to this planet, whose sole job is to guide us and to help us. And to find that source of wisdom, whoever it be, wherever it may be, and take that source of wisdom into yourself and follow, literally. Okay, so I'd like to just end with like maybe a 5 to 7 minute. So this is a very simple meditation practice given by His Holiness Sant Rajendra Singh, a lineage of spiritual teachers that goes all the way back to Guru Nanak. And it's a very simple practice, and if you don't have a practice already of meditation, you'll find that this is very easily adaptable and highly effective, and it's very interfaith in its origin. So get into any position which you can sit comfortably for about, let's say, 5 to 7 minutes. Once you're in that position, take a moment to just deeply relax, and you can just close your eyes very, very gently, as if you're going to sleep. But you're not. Bring your attention to the center of your soul, lying directly between your two eyes, in the center of the forehead. This we call the eye of spiritual perception, or the eye of the soul, or the third eye, or the single eye, the Shiva Netra, the Nukta Sweta, many traditions, but we all recognize this is the place from which we can enter into and commune with that divine illumination. And I want you to look lovingly, penetratingly, but without any expectation, without clutching, without anything except just reverential longing. And look into the general center, not a single point, but the general center of that. And then let's do the second call to action, which is, let's remember God. Let us praise God. Let us invoke God's presence in whatever name that you feel comfortable. It could be the name of Jesus. It could be the name of Buddha. It could be just the name love. It could be the name unity or peace. In any way that you find comfortable to praise and acknowledge that divine presence, begin to repeat that internally very slowly to help keep the outer thoughts of the world from intervening and disturbing our concentration. And if we can hold our attention in a fixed way, steady way, for 4 or 5 minutes, then with God's grace, sometimes the inner eye just begins to open and we begin to experience illumination. Sometimes just pinpricks of light, sometimes clouds, sometimes sudden bursts of color, and so on and so forth. If you begin to experience any form of God's illumination, then just absorb yourself into that, merge into that, expand your awareness into that limitless illumination that is within you. So this sitting will be for just 5 to 7 minutes, and we pray to God Almighty and to all the great spiritual masters and sages and saints who have come and who have blessed this world to bless and guide each and every one of us and give us whatever is in our best interests. So let us begin. Please leave off. Thank you. So just by way of wrap up, before we take a few questions, I just want to say what a joy it is for me to be here. And how much I enjoy being able to be with each and every one of you and share some of the great teachings of the great masters that we are all hopefully imbibing in our lives. And if you got anything good here, praise them, thank them, thank God. They're deserving of all the credit. And if there are any mistakes and errors, I'll take credit for those. So thank you so, so much. And it's just wonderful to be here. And we open up the floor to questions or comments or suggestions or answers, if you have any answers. We're always looking for that.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew. Beautiful. I'd like to now open the floor for questions. If you do have a question, please wait for the microphone so that we can actually record the question as well as the answer. And we are taking questions online as well. Who would like to begin?
If we try to stop complaining, but other people keep complaining, are we supposed to complain about their complaining?
That's good.
How do we deal with
it? I think you just answer your own question. Humor is a great way to deal with that. No. You know, sometimes people ask me that question. You know, a lot of times we are with people and we find that their energies affect us, and we find that being around certain people uplift us and certain people kind of bring us into a certain negative state of mind. So I would say, be with the people who uplift you. And if you're strong enough, uplift the people who don't. But a lot of times we're not. And to be very practical, what happens is that people are, because we're so influenced by other people. And why is that? Let's just take a look at that for a second. Thoughts are things. Thoughts radiate. Thoughts are powerful. And so if you're with someone who has a very low negative energy and we are not in a strong place, your energy will be brought down as well. And you'll find yourself falling into the traps that they may be falling into. So we definitely have to be aware of, not in a judgmental sense, but we have to be aware of the company we keep. Spiritual people want to be around people who share their same ideas and their same mode of living. When you get really strong, you can go out and be with anybody, and just being in their presence, you'll uplift them. You'll give them strength. And everybody knows that. Who do you want to hang out with? You want to hang out with that person who's supportive, who is loving, who's accepting of you, who, when you get in their presence, makes you smile, makes you laugh, makes you feel supported, and most of all, makes you feel loved, right? And generally, we tend to avoid the people who take us in the wrong direction. Key thing is, be centered in your own self. Be so strong in your own self that you're not affected, all right? And if you really get good at it, what you can do is you can learn how to, through your own precise living and careful choice of words, switch the conversation, right? So if you see a conversation, this is hard, it's not easy. Switching the conversation when you see it going, let's say you're with a friend or a relative and they're moving in a direction that's really not the right direction. You sense it, you feel it. You can't just say to them, hey, listen, this is a stupid conversation, right? You can't just say that, can you? Because then you look stupid, and you are. So what you have to do is you have to learn the art of shifting the conversation through very careful observation of where the person really wants to go, but take it in another place. Okay? That takes a little bit of intuitive wisdom and careful living, but it can be done. And what happens is that all of a sudden you gradually shift the conversation, you're into a better topic, and what you've done, you've not only helped them move away from thought forms that are going to bring them down, because all of those thought forms will bring them down. They will feel worse after saying them. They'll get more negative, more depressed, more isolated, and so you've saved them without putting them down, without criticizing them, and without falling into the trap that they're falling into. Try it, but be careful.
I was in a journaling class today, and I thought it would be interesting to share this and also have your comments on it. One of the ladies said, I can't relate to people who have all this sorrow and sadness. I always want to bring them around to be happy again. She said, I'm a very happy person. And she said, it's really hard for me to be have them understand that I'm grateful for my life and being happy. Mm. And she said, when people have a lot of sorrow, I keep wanting to fix it, bringing them around. Mm. And I thought it was very interesting in all this, you know, being grateful. But sometimes people have a lot of hardship in their lives. And she said, they want me to comfort them. So it's interesting in terms of how do you express that positive way when people do have some people have very, very difficult lives.
Well, I'll give you a humorous story. A friend of mine who kept running into the same situation all the time. And she was a spiritual person, and she was always upbeat. She was one of those kind of people, so energetic, so very, very positive. And whenever she got into a conversation, she later became a psychologist, by the way, and so did her husband, and I still know them. Whenever she would meet anyone who was going through some kind of really difficult crisis, really grappling, could be a very serious illness or whatever, there's some heavy karma there, she would bring in this very bouncy energy, very upbeat energy, and it was like a total clash, just didn't work. And she would say to people, well, just be happy. Just drop your problem. Don't you see you don't need anymore? This kind of conversation is like that. Just drop it. I was there. Just drop it. Can't you just drop it now? And of course they can't. If they could have, they would have, right? Then something happened to her. She got cancer. I'm not making a connection here between that, by the way. She just got cancer. What happened in her journey was very interesting, Kathy. She learned from her cancer a lot about suffering and how to deal not only with her own suffering and her own journey, but how to deal with others. And she went from a person who was very much like I just described to someone who became deeply empathetic and compassionate and could actually help people out of that. Why? Because she had gone through the journey herself. So being positive doesn't mean that you have to have an upbeat attitude. You don't have to have a kind of, you have to be able to harmonize first with that. You have to be inside of them. You have to work from the inside out, which means you have to be in their shoes and experience what they're experiencing. And then through your own experience, actually a kind of a unity consciousness, you uplift them from the inside. It's a very profound process. People who know how to enter into, and there's a law for this. It's called the law of homogeneity. What is the law of homogeneity? It's the law of sympathetic vibrations that resonate. And that means that if you are coming from a very, very positive place, it doesn't mean you have to be bouncy and external. It means that your consciousness is very positive. And anyone who comes into that field of consciousness, you don't have to say anything. You will uplift them through the power of your vibration. The example of which I'm going to give for people who have been in the presence of a very evolved being. When I went to India, I think it was the third or fourth time, and I was in the presence of my own spiritual master, Sankarpal Singh, I would see people come one after the other, crying, weeping, pouring their heart out with the master, and then leaving, smiling, laughing, dancing, having forgotten they even had a problem. How did it happen? Because his compassion was so great, by the law of homogeneity, that he simply took on their pain and absorbed it in his own. Just absorbed it. Literally, whoosh, took it away. That's what a great master can do. We can do that on our own small level by being totally present to another person's suffering. Not giving advice, not trying to change the person, not trying to artificially manipulate the situation, just to be 100% with that person in their journey. And by doing so, consciousness, that awareness of consciousness heals them, helps them out of that situation. So it requires to be totally present to another person. And if we could do this, all of us, if we could just be present 20% of the time with the people we really love, all of our relationships would change. We're like ships passing in the night. No one is present to anybody. We're not there for each other at the human level. That's what I learned from this lesson, from being in the presence of the master. He was just so there that you just look into him and you just say, oh my God, he's just taking everything away. And the people would walk away. I said, magic. No, not magic. The law of sympathy, the law of compassion. It works on every level. Mothers, and I've known many cases. Child is on one coast, like Pacific, mother's on the other. The mother is so tuned to that child that if that child gets sick, without them even communicating, she will sympathetically take on some of that illness. I've seen it in many, many cases. She's sympathetically, without him there ever communicating, she's so in touch with each other. So that is what love does.
Obviously, gratitude changes something internal. Do you believe it's a force that changes something outside as well?
Absolutely, but what do you mean more specifically? In what sense?
In that it has a change in effect on something external. It's not just a perception.
Oh, yes. But specifically, are you saying changing our attitudes externally or changing the way we relate to other people? What specifically are you doing?
Physically as well. Events and times.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a higher state of consciousness. And that higher state of consciousness attracts a whole different, all kinds of new experiences to us, right? And so the more we're in that state, it actually becomes, as I said before, it becomes a way of looking at the world. And when we look at the world in a new way, everything that we see changes. So it changes our perception of everything. It changes the way we relate to everybody. Everything changes from that new perspective. And it becomes part of who we are. It's like part of breathing. It's like every day we're breathing. And that's why I say, if you start every day, if you really work with this practice, and you really, really follow it, every single day, begin and end your day with a practice of gratitude, you will find that during the day, all of a sudden, experiences of joy and peace and happiness begin to come to us spontaneously. Try it. For me, there's no question. There's absolutely 100%. And as we imbibe that joy, as we begin to see things differently, our whole perception of life changes. So it is a very concrete, very powerful practice and essential, really, if we want to be happy. And there, I want to draw a distinction between what I call, and this is not necessarily related to what you're saying, but it just occurred to me to draw a distinction that sometimes we don't make. Sometimes you see people and you say, oh, they see life through rosy-colored glasses, right? You meet people that you may say that. And what we're really trying to do on the spiritual path is not see life through rosy-colored glasses, but take off our colored glasses, our smoky-colored glasses, and our bias and judgment-laden glasses to see the world as it really is. Now, here's the jump I want to make. The great masters have said, God is beautiful, reasonable. Any world that God makes is also beautiful. Because only beauty can come out of beauty. And now I'm quoting my spiritual master. And if we see any ugliness in the world, it is due to our smoky colored, our tinted glasses that we're wearing, which are part of our past experiences that we see the world through. The world is not ugly. It is our past perception of the world that creates that. And yes, yes, everything that is happening has a higher purpose behind it. And that's hard for us grounded in the West to see right away. But from a higher perspective, it's all about awakening. And sometimes God has to give us a big wake-up call, because most people do not come to God without a big wake-up call. Sometimes we need to get hit on the head before we get it. And if it takes that, God will do whatever it takes to wake us up. We sleep through life because if we're given everything we want, where is there a need for God? We forget, and you'll find that people who are given everything on a material level or on different levels, they tend to be the most forgetful. Pull away some of those gifts, right? And all of a sudden, the awakening starts to happen. So God has, there are the mysterious ways in which God teaches us, in which God brings us, pulls us back to himself that we cannot fully understand. But to know in our deepest heart of hearts that they are all specially wrapped gifts for each and every one of us with your name or my name on it, whatever it is.
Andrew, we'll take one question online.
Okay. I'm ready.
Thank you for your wonderful presentation. I really enjoyed changing complaining to praising. Mm-hmm. Being able to hold praise throughout the day seems like it would really change lives. What would happen if, when we are around negative people, we intentionally praise them and God with our thoughts, words, and actions? Thank you.
Tell him to try it.
You tell him, Andrew. Okay. He's watching.
Okay, so, well, let's just start with this. If we are in communion with the divine light that is within us, if we are aligned with that light that is the light and life of our lives, if we are in alignment with that, what we will see is the same light in everybody. First, we have to see that divine light, God's light within ourselves. When we see that divine light within ourselves, then we begin to see it in others. When that happens, our whole perception, and this is part of gratitude, this is part of the whole perceptual changes, we see every being as a manifestation of the divine. And here's the key thing. We see them with all of their faults and imperfections without judgment. Wow. Right now, what we see is all of their faults without clarity and with judgment. And how do you know the difference? Really simple. Too simple for words. Because when you don't love them, you judge them. When you love them, you do not judge them. A mother can have a child. I can tell you my mother had tremendous love for all of her children. And she had some difficult cases. And mothers can understand this. But you love your children unconditionally anyways. And God loves us absolutely, completely, unconditionally. The proof of which is, if you've read any of the near-death literature, you know that when people go into the beyond and they have this life review, some of you read the life review processes that happens. The amazing thing is that even though they come to see all of the mistakes they made, the experience of divine acceptance, the experience of divine love, and the experience of unconditional divine love is so profound that it completely changes who they are. So the secret is for this gentleman and all of us to love others unconditionally by first loving ourselves unconditionally, By seeing first the God that is within us by meditating every day. All right? Back to call one. And it all comes back to that. Tell him thank you.